Today we talk about the Persian Empire. And why are we talking about the Persian Empire? Esther was there, right in the middle of it. So there is also another word used for this empire. I've heard it Achaemenid and Achaemenid. But that was named after a king that was before this period of time. So we're going to call it the Persian Empire. Let's read about how, let's back up a little bit. And before the Persian Empire, there was the Babylonian Empire. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. Okay, and we're familiar with that story, very familiar with the Daniel story and how his friends went. This was the first group of exiles. There were three groups that went to Babylon from Jerusalem, from Judah, and Daniel was in the very first group. Notice they were nobility. What tribe was he from?
Judah.
That's the lineage, isn't it? The lineage of Christ. Okay, so these were special young men, and they were going to be trained in the Chaldean or the Babylonian culture. So, we know that because of God's favor, Daniel rose in position, didn't he, in the Babylonian king's court, and he became a prominent figure. He interpreted dreams for the king. And here's a map just showing the Jerusalem to Babylon, and a little bit about, we're in the middle of trying to figure out how the Jews got to Susa. This is the beginning of how they had to leave Jerusalem, and first they went to Babylon under King Nebuchadnezzar. So we know that Daniel interpreted dreams for King Nebuchadnezzar, and the first dream, this is the interpretation of the dream, and let's see. Delia, would you read this interpretation, the one in quotes?
This was a dream. Now we will tell its interpretation before the king. You, O king, are the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, the strength, and the glory. And wherever the sons of men dwell, or the beasts of the field, or the birds of the sky, he has given them into your hand, and has caused you to rule over them all. You are the head of all. After you, there will arise another kingdom inferior to you, then another third kingdom of bronze, which will rule over all the earth. Then there will be a fourth kingdom, as strong as iron. Inasmuch as iron crushes and shatters all things, so, like iron that breaks in pieces, it will crush and break all these in pieces.
Okay, so Daniel's interpreting this dream that Nebuchadnezzar had of this statue. And he's telling him, Nebuchadnezzar, you are the head of gold. You are prominent, and you are where you are because of God. God has given you this position in the world. Okay, So, and he tells, and we know from history, because of his interpretation, that there would be four, there were four kingdoms, three to come after Babylon. And because of history, we can know that these were the kingdoms: Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. All right, so we are talking about Persia, and that is the kingdom that he said would come after Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. So, do we remember what was going on in Babylon when Persia conquered Babylon? Do you remember the handwriting on the wall? That was the night that Persia overcame Babylon. Okay, so remember Daniel was called in to interpret the handwriting on the wall. Belshazzar was extremely, he said he turned pale, his knees knocked. He just kind of became this jellyfish. He was pretty upset, and you can imagine, as he is drinking and feasting with the temple treasures, the goblets, the vessels that Nebuchadnezzar had taken from Jerusalem to Babylon. Here, many years later, Belshazzar's having this drunken feast and feasting to his god and defiling the god of all. Okay, so it says, you praise the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which cannot hear or see or hear or understand, but you did not honor the God who holds his hand in his hand your life and all your ways. And he tells Belshazzar, this is Daniel giving the interpretation, what these things mean, what the handwriting meant. God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. You have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Belshazzar died that night. So his days were truly numbered and brought to an end. All right, so have you thought about how hard that would be for Daniel to tell a king that? Yet the king had already promised him to move him into third position in the kingdom if Daniel could interpret this dream. And he did. But look what he had to tell him. That couldn't have been easy. All right. So we're going to talk about where the how the Persians got, how they came up and grew their empire and became the people that they were. If you look over in the upper right-hand corner, there's, I don't know if you can read it from where you are, it says Iranian homeland. That is where they began. They began to migrate. They were horse herders, horse breeders, and herders. They were nomadic people. And they began to migrate into the Media area, the blue, and down into Persis, the kind of brownish-orange color. So they migrated there. It said it took them many generations. They would pick up people along the way. They would probably be herding and breeding their horses and moving along, pick up some other people and stay there for a while, then keep moving. So the migration took a while. It began around 1000 B.C. David became king in Jerusalem around that time. So it helps sometimes to know what's going on in other parts of the world. All right. Then we see the Medes and the Persians begin to grow, and Cyrus the Great begins to conquer people. Says he took the Medes and the Persians, he united them, and they became the Medo-Persian group. Okay, the Medo-Persian Empire. Then he added Lydia. Can you see this is up here? And Babylonia here. You see how large it's getting already. It's growing and growing. And then his son later added Egypt. Cambyses added Egypt. Then Darius came along and added in the red the western parts of India and a little bit of Greece, which it says gave the empire the distinction of now holding European lands. And that was that had never happened before in ancient empires. All right. I wanted to bring out this verse. When Paul was in Athens and he was talking to the people about the unknown God, he tells them, "The God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him." We talked about how life started with Adam last week, didn't we? But we are seeing on this map, on these maps as we go through, how geography changes. We've seen it in our lifetime, haven't we? The different parts of nations that change, especially over in maybe Eastern Europe and USSR, which is no longer the USSR. It's a lot of other little countries. We see those boundaries change. God has determined those things, when they happen and how they change. All right. If you have any impressions, comments, not too many questions, but questions, let me know. All right. So we know that the Persian Empire came about because God, that was his purpose. He's in charge of his creation, and that includes geographical boundaries. All right, so let's talk about the Persian Empire and some of the things at the height of the empire. Extended from the Indus River over on the right there in the east to Egypt, Lydia, and the Greek coast in the west. It grew to be the largest empire the world had ever seen. Babylon was a great empire. This one was larger. It is believed to have ruled over 44% of the world's population. That's pretty impressive. And during this time is when we read about Xerxes and Esther, Mordecai and Haman. The dates of the book of Esther around 483 to 472 B.C. And that is about 60 years after Cyrus decreed that the Jews could go back to Jerusalem. And, of course, that we'll probably talk about this later, about, you know, always brings up the question, why? Why is Esther still in Persia? Why was Daniel in Susa? Remember, Daniel went to Babylon. And as the empires changed, he probably went with those kings, right? He was quite knowledgeable and trained, experienced in the king's court. So it's very likely that he went with those kings. In fact, we know he did because Cyrus and Darius are mentioned. So here are some of the rulers. We're not going to go through all of them. We're going to talk about the ones in bold: Cyrus the Great, Darius the First, Xerxes the First, and Darius the Third. Just a few comments about each one of those. So the end of the Persian Empire, we'll talk about this later too, is when Alexander the Great, he was the one who conquered Persia. All right, so Cyrus the Great was from about 559 to 530. He pulled the Medes and the Persians together, so he conquered the Medes. He set up a government where he used He used all the people that he conquered. He used the Medes and the Persians. It wasn't just like he had his own little court of people, and those were the only ones who were going to be his officials and the only ones he was going to use. He used the people that he conquered also. Hello? Well? I did that earlier when we were, just before we got ready. I just clicked the mouse and it went to the desktop. All right. See if we can get back there. Okay, and his victory on Babylon, we talked about that over Babylon, happened on the night that Belshazzar saw the handwriting on the wall. I don't know if you've ever read anything about that, the way the Medes and the Persians got into Babylon. But the river flowed alongside the city, and they diverted it upstream enough that the soldiers could walk in. I believe it was about thigh high, and got into the city. Some things I've read said that, of course, Belshazzar was surprised. He was drunk and feasting and having a good old time, and then, of course, scared out of his wits when he saw the handwriting on the wall. But many of the Babylonians were waiting for this, and they actually considered, they considered Cyrus the Great to be a liberator. Apparently, things were not so good in Babylon, even for the citizens. He is considered to be the first to establish a charter of human rights, and that's on the Cyrus cylinder. It was, I read a sort of a press release introducing this new ruler with new ideas. And there were six sections of this cylinder. His plans for Babylon, what he was going to do to build up Babylon, to restore it, a detail of all his titles and his lineage. He charged the former king of Babylon with crimes. He had a prayer to Marduk, his god, and a declaration that he would enable the people to live in peace. And that's one thing about Cyrus that he did. Remember, the first thing he did was let the Jews go back to Jerusalem. And we know in Esther's time that people lived in provinces, and they, when we're going to learn more about that, how they were allowed to observe their own customs, their own religion, whatever nationality they were, that he allowed that. All right. So the last point was that the one I just made, they considered him not a conqueror but a liberator. And I wondered if they were remembering the old prophecies. In Isaiah, this is a prophecy, God's words to Isaiah the prophet about Cyrus. And it's a pretty impressive prophecy. Let's see, Shannon, would you read this?
It is I. Says of Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and he will perform all my desire. He declares of Jerusalem she will be built, and of the temple a foundation will be laid. Thus says the Lord to Cyrus, his anointed, whom I have taken by the right hand to subdue nations before him. To subdue nations before him, to open doors before him, so that gates will not be shut. I will go before you and make the rough places smooth. I will shatter the doors of bronze and cut through their iron bars, so that you may know that it is I, the Lord, the God of Israel, who calls you by your name, for the sake of Jacob my servant, and Israel my people. I have given you a title of honor. Through me you have not known me.
Okay, though you have not known me. Yeah, so what does God call Cyrus? My shepherd, his anointed. Remember what? Anointed is from the word Messiah. And we know that we think of Messiah as Jesus Christ, right? Well, Messiah is a word used for different ones. The anointed one is what it means. Remember, the prophets would go and anoint a future king, right? Samuel anointed Saul. He anointed David. So Messiah is Hebrew for anointed one. God is calling Cyrus his anointed. So he's a Messiah to the people, a deliverer, savior, liberator, many times referred to a future king. All right, I have also called you by your name. And so he calls him by name. I've given you a title of honor, though you have not known me. What did we say last week? God uses heathens. He uses imperfect people. Whatever it takes, whoever he needs to use for his purpose, that's he does that. So, to me, this is, I love to read the prophecies and then their fulfillments. To me, it's so faith-building to think about how, you know, years before Cyrus came along, God sent this message through Isaiah. All right. So Cyrus the Great fulfilled this prophecy by allowing the Jews to return to Jerusalem. It says in the first year of his reign. So as soon as he came to reign, this is found in Ezra. Remember, this is when the exiles were heading back to Jerusalem. And let's read this, Kim.
In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and also put it in writing. Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever is among you of all his people, may his God be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and rebuild the house of the Lord, the God of Israel. He is the God who is in Jerusalem. And let each survivor, in whatever place he sojourns, be assisted in the men by the men of his place with silver and gold, with goods and with beasts, besides free will offerings for the house of God that is in Jerusalem.
All right. Cyrus is mentioned in 2 Chronicles and Ezra, and that actually, that passage was taken from Ezra 1, but it's also in 2 Chronicles, at the end of 2 Chronicles, which leads right into Ezra 1. Mentioned in Isaiah, which we just read, the long passage of the prophecy, and in Daniel, it says that Daniel prospered under Darius and Cyrus. Okay, we don't know exactly how Cyrus died. Some say that he was off fighting some tribes or something, got killed. Others say he died peacefully in his sleep. His remains are believed to be in a tomb in the ancient city of Pasargadae. I actually listened to the little pronunciation on Wikipedia or something. So, Pasargadae. And that is there near Persepolis. I know you can't read. You see where Persis is. And then that is a picture of his tomb. Oh, anyway. Okay.
Charlotte, don't you find it amazing that these large tombs like this are still standing?
And they do occasionally do some restoration work on them, but you can tell that's very worn and aged and quite old. Yes. And there's an epitaph is believed to be from him. O man, whoever you are and wherever you come from, for I know you will come, I am Cyrus, who won the Persians their empire. Do not therefore begrudge me this bit of earth that covers my bones. Won't that be all of us? We'll have a little bit of dirt to cover our bones. But what a tomb he designed for himself and had built. All right, then there's Darius the First. He rebuilt and renovated Susa. And Susa is where we'll be when we begin Esther. That was the citadel and one of the capitals. I have read four capital cities, and then I've also read about five. So he finished some of the work of his predecessors. If you look at some of these cities and buildings, you understand why one didn't finish it. They are amazing pieces of architecture. And so one would start it and maybe not finish it, and then another ruler come to power. And this Darius decided to continue some of that work. He built the city of Persepolis, which was one of the capital cities. He linked the Nile River and the Red Sea by a canal. It's believed that probably one of the pharaohs began this ancient Suez Canal, and that Darius finished that. And he's also mentioned in Ezra, Nehemiah, Daniel, Haggai, and Zechariah. All right, so this is from Daniel 6, 1 through 3. Let's see, who would like to read? Terry? Mm-hmm.
It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three high officials, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps should give account, so that the king might suffer no loss. Then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom.
Okay. Now, by this time, it's likely Daniel is not in Babylon anymore, because this is Darius, one of the kings of Persia. And Babylon was one of the capital cities, so we don't know exactly when Daniel moved, but we do find him in Susa later. Okay, so he was had distinguished himself above all the other officials, and we know from here that we have the story of the lion's den, where the king was sort of tricked into throwing him into the lion's den because Daniel would not bow down to the king and insisted on praying to his god. And Darius, that he did not want to do that. And he checked on him the next morning, didn't he? And this is what he said when he found Daniel safe after a night of a sleepless night. Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and language that dwell in all the earth, "Peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people are to tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion shall be to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. He who has saved Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Daniel 6, 25 through 28. God used the faithful, didn't he? He used Cyrus, who was a heathen, but he used the faithful and elevated them in positions that were high in foreign countries, foreign nations. Remember Joseph. We know he rose because he distinguished himself also. They made, they resolved themselves to being true to God. It was not easy. I can't even imagine. It could not have been easy. God used them and brought them, elevated them higher and higher. Joseph, Daniel, and then we'll see Esther do the same thing. All right. This is Darius' tomb, believed to be his tomb. And this was not far from Persepolis, which was one of the cities that he built. All right, so we see Persepolis there on the map. Then let's talk about Xerxes. He is sometimes called Ahasuerus. Some versions of the Bible in Esther call him Ahasuerus. He is the same king who deposed Vashti and made Esther queen. He went to great lengths to try to get more of Greece. He did all kinds of things. One of the very innovative things he did, remember you had to cross water to get from Asia Minor over to Greece, he built a boat bridge. And let's see if this is just a diagram. They would tether these boats together side by side and put the planking across to go into Greece. I think that's pretty innovative. But one time they broke apart, and it said, one of the accounts said that he was so angry at the waters that he beat and he cursed the waters. It was kind of strange. And he built the Gate of All Nations. Those are some ruins of that. And let's see, these, I was just going to show the some of the capital cities. Ecbatana, Susa, Babylon, Persepolis, and then we mentioned Pisargadae a while ago. All right, so here are some major achievements of the empire during those years. There was peaceful rule, and we know that from Cyrus began ruling the people peacefully and would conquer peoples and let them have liberty in their culture, their religion. There was far-reaching trade and commerce. Some of these things I would like, as we get into the text and where they fit in with the text in Esther, for people to volunteer for maybe a 2 to 5 minute report. No more than five, because then we take away from the text, but that would be great if people are interested. I want to take your names and get with you. There was a money system. The Royal Road. This is very interesting and would be an interesting report to do. It's not, doesn't involve a lot of research. You Google Royal Road and you come up with all kinds of hits, and they're usually about the Persians. Effective government structure. Remember the satraps that we've read about? There were 120 or 127, and they were different sections of the empire. They each had a governor and would report to people under the king or to him. There was freedom of religion, language, and culture for the conquered people. The architecture and technology was amazing. Water system and sewer system. We don't think of that in ancient times, do we? And the Zoroastrian religion and monotheism. So there was one god under their religion, and not everyone embraced this religion. But we do probably need to talk about that when we get into Esther. Zoroaster was the god or person, I think it was a person actually, who came up with this religion, and it's believed that Cyrus did practice this religion. But we can learn more about that. And the Hanging Gardens of Babylon actually were not during the Babylonian Empire, but later, with one of the Persian kings. And we know them to be one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Okay, so then I just put a map of the Royal Road, 1,500 miles from Asia Minor to Susa. Very effective way of travel. This is called a Kanat system. This was for irrigation. Up in their plateau areas and other places where they were, when they were nomads, and even, they say today, there are still many of these left and used. It was a very effective way of, they would drill this mother well, this first vertical tunnel, and hit water, and then they would drill the other shafts for maintenance, and then the water carrying channel at the bottom, and it would flow out into some outlet where they needed irrigation, where they needed it for themselves. But if you think about it, a civilization cannot thrive and grow without water, and this was one of their main systems for getting water and distributing it. All right, the fall of the Persian Empire. After Xerxes I, who was not a great ruler himself, there was a series of rulers who were weak, and they tried to hold everything together by becoming more and more harsh. that, of course, that creates discontent. And there was increased taxation. There were more and more uprisings in the outlying provinces. There were 50 years of war with the Greeks. And by the way, those wars didn't... Xerxes was not very successful with those. And Alexander the Great eventually invaded Persia in 334 and conquered it in 331. So that was the fall of the Persian Empire. Let's read the rest of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Carly, would you read this?
In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed. And that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but it will itself endure forever. Inasmuch as you saw that a stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will take place in the future, so the dream is true and its interpretation is trustworthy.
All right, so remember the four kingdoms on the statue. And there was going to be, well, this, a final kingdom. All of those were physical kingdoms. But this final kingdom is the one that Jesus Christ reigns over. And remember, that lineage was so important to bring him here to save us. So this final kingdom is here now. We're part of that kingdom. And so God's plan is fulfilled in Christ. And that kingdom will never end. All right. Here's a few pictures of Persian architecture. This was the tomb of Xerxes. I don't know if you can see, but there's quite some intricate carving up there at the top of figures and cornice work. Amazing. This was the royal palace in Persepolis. That's some ruins in Persepolis. A model of the citadel in Susa, so you can picture Esther within those walls. Palace in Susa, perhaps. And that's it for today. I was going to ask who would be interested in doing some kind of report throughout the quarter. The Royal Road? Okay. And I'll have some more topics. I just... okay. Who else? I want to see all these hands going up. Okay, I'll put everybody down. It's really with all the Googling we have these days, you know. Okay. All righty. And I'll let you know what week, you know, we'll be needing certain reports. So I will, I know I didn't put out an email yesterday or this past week, and I told you I probably wouldn't. But I will be doing that now that we're getting into the text. So go ahead. If you haven't already started reading, be sure to read Esther 1 for next week. And I have something else I would love to do. I'm going to do it. And I would love for some of the rest of you to do this too. And that is to copy the book of Esther. There are 10 chapters, 167 verses, and that calculates to about 2 verses a day, which is not very much. I was going to read, if someone would turn to Deuteronomy 17 and verse 18, and God is talking about the future. You know, in Deuteronomy, they're still talking about Moses is giving, going through the law a second time before he dies. And so this is way before kings, but God knew that they were going to ask for a king. And Marcia, read what he tells them about the king.
Just verse 18.
Uh-huh. I believe that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself in a book a copy of this law approved by the Levitical priests.
All right. The king was to write the law when he came to the throne. I would like to think that we could all do. I've heard that this is very effective. I've done it myself before, but not probably a whole book. This is not a long book. And I also would encourage you, when you start to read this, if you can be by yourself, to read it out loud. That makes a difference with me. I don't know if anybody else. Terry, have you tried that?
It's I didn't tell the others in the household.
Yes. It's very effective, isn't it?
It helps me.
I did that with Job one time, and when I got to the part where God's saying, have you ever done this? And I started crying. It was the most beautiful, beautiful words. And it's so poetic in there. Anyway, I think it would be effective. So, yeah, I'm saying also read it out loud. But yeah, I'm talking about actually write it out and find you a little notebook or something and write it out. I'm going to do that. I'm going to try that. And I would love to think that some of the rest of us would do that too. And I'll send an email reminder.
I'll do the money system.
Okay. And I don't have all the topics yet, so I may need to